All right. Hello and welcome to yet another Value Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Walker. And with me today, I'm happy to have Sean Ittings. Sean is an entrepreneur and microcap investor. Sean, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you doing, Andrew?
I'm doing great. Let me start this podcast the way I do every podcast. First, I'm going to remind everyone with a disclaimer, nothing on this podcast is investing advice, especially with Sean. We might be talking about some microcaps. So everyone should just remember, do your own due diligence, be very cautious. Nothing on here is investing advice. And then second, let me start the podcast with a pitch for you, my guest. I'm going to link it in the show notes, but I read your write-up on this stock we're going to talk about today, EXPI, and it was just unbelievable. As soon as I read it, I was like, I need to reach out to him. I need to have him on. Unfortunately, they reported earnings yesterday and the stock was up like 40%. It would have been great to get it a couple days ago, but the write-up was awesome. It actually brought back some bad memories for me because you wrote up another kind of growthy microcap, EXPEL, a couple years ago, which has become a 50 or 70 or 80 bagger at this point. And I owned about 2% of them when you wrote them up and told them 50 or 70 or 80 baggers ago. So anyway, you've got obviously got an eye for investing in these really interesting growthy companies that can really change the world and, you know, compound at huge rates for a long time. So excited to have you on. Appreciate the write-up. Appreciate you coming on. That out the way, let's turn to the company you want to talk about. It's EXP World. The ticker is EXPI. And I'll just turn it over to you. What is EXPI and why are you so interested in them?
So EXPI is an online real estate brokerage company. And for most people, if you don't know, with real estate business, a real estate agent, at least here in the US, they need to get their license and hang their their license at a brokerage company. And so for past years, a real estate agent would have to go to a brokerage, which would be a brick and mortar place, usually a local business, and they would get their license with them. And then from there, the brokerage would provide like the training, the back office administrative support and such to, and gathering things for the real estate agents and to help them succeed and perform their duties as a real estate agent. And so the setup that has traditionally been common or traditional within the industry would be, the brokerage would take a part or of the commission split. So, I'm sure years ago, it would be pretty standard to have like a 50-50 kind of partnership split between agent and brokerage, because the brokerage, they have not only brick and mortar costs to have run their operations, but they have, the owner, they have, administrative support, they have managers to help, answer questions. So there's lots of different needs and costs within a brokerage company. And so nowadays you think, okay, well, we have the internet, and how has that been able to help? So an online cloud kind of brokerage, which EXP would be considered, is that they utilize internet to help communicate and connect the brokerage, administrative support, the online training with the real estate agent. And so when you're taking out that brick and mortar part of that equation, your costs, can go down quite significantly. So EXP, how can they do that? So they found a company called Verbella that had created kind of like an online campus that allows somebody to virtually connect into a virtual space and meet with other people. So right now we're in a Zoom conversation. So I'm speaking, you can see my face and I see Andrew over here. But in that space, it's 3D models, you're in 3D campus. So it's a little different and a little bit more immersive.
It reminds me of like, I haven't used it. I only went to the website and looked, but it reminds me of, it kind of looks like The Sims from the late 90s or early 2000s, or there was like, I think it was called Second Life, was a big Second online Life, video game. Yep. Yeah, it really looks like Second Life from what I remember of those clips, just to give everybody a little bit of extra background.
Right, right. So it's kind of clunky-ish looking in terms of, 3D and what it looks like. But there's, a need, and I'll probably talk about that later on, and what type of problem and friction that's kind of solving between the real estate agent and the brokerage. So anyway, it's the cloud kind of brokerage allows that, there's less brick and mortar costs because we don't have, you know, 100 different buildings that we're trying to pay off, et cetera. And so that's pretty much what eXp, and not only do they have that component of the business, the way that they've been able to grow and take share from the traditional brokerages is because of the way that they're incentivizing, number one, the agents. So the split that I talked about before being like 50-50 or 60-40, you know, quite high. Now eXp is cut that down, their portion of the commission split to 20%. So the agent would be getting 80%, the brokerage eXp would be getting 20%. And then they're throwing on tons of different incentives. So not only doing that, they have equity issuances to or in awards to agents who are making their first transaction. They're reaching other different milestones. And if, say, you're a big producer and you've been able to generate enough commission, say, to eXp, you know, if it's 16,000, which is, yep, you know, like four, I don't know how many million in transaction volume, but it'd be like $3 to $4 million, something like that. If you can hit that, and then you would be able to get a 100% commission, you know, minus a transaction fee per transaction. And then on top of that, you get $16,000 in stock awarded to you. And in addition to all of the stock awards, the higher commission split, you're getting a revenue share for attracting other agents into the eXp model. And so if you think there's a tons of real estate agents throughout the, at least the US, I think the it's 1.7 or 1.8 million real estate agents in the U.S., according to the National Association of Realtors. And then on top of that, there's even more who aren't a part of the NAR. You know, so there's 2.3 or however many million just in the U.S. And of course, you have outside globally even more. So you have all these people doing business right now, working with a traditional brokerage or some other competitor. And eXp has just been able to acquire all of this, you know, the talent who's doing good business into their model through a revenue share. So an agent would be able to go to another agent who is not eXp and say, okay, well, this company is great. Not only do you get high commission splits, not only do you get stock equity awards, but you also get revenue share. And they just recently announced yesterday a dividend too. So there's just so many different avenues to make money as an agent, because if you think as a traditional agent, you only have the way to make money is to go out and sell real estate, right? But that's, you're running out of hamster treadmill. You know, it's, if you're not doing any business, you're not making any money. But with eXp, you make money through your commissions, selling real estate, you make money through revenue share, attracting other agents to the business and whatever transactions they make. So you get a perpetual income stream, yep, based on that. You have the stock equity award, and then you have now a dividend. So there's so many different ways to make money and build a kind of scalable, lasting business by yourself within that model, as opposed to elsewhere. So that kind of gives an idea.
If I could steal from your write-up, which, by the way, I'm going to include in the show notes, everybody who's interested in the company, enjoys this conversation, should go and check out, should follow the show notes and go check out his write-up. But if I could steal from your write-up, what they've done is they've really harnessed the power of incentives, right? So they cut out all the overhead associated with the physical locations that you said. They give their agents better commission splits. Yep. And then they give them, hey, if you hit a lot of volume, if you work really hard, we're going to drop our commission completely. So it incentivizes the best agents to come work for them because they can keep more of what they sell. And they actually, once they sell enough, they can keep all of it. Where I do think other brokerages do have kind of a similar, hey, once you hit a certain cap, you keep a lot of your extra. But the commission splits are better here. And the incentives of, hey, you're an agent, you love working for us, you get great money. If you know about any other agents, lure them in, and you're incentivized because if you do, you get to keep a piece of their commission. And they're going to be incentivized to come over here because they're going to hear from you how great it is, how much more money you're making, all this type of stuff. So am I kind of summing that up correctly?
Yep. So it's perfect. The superpowers of incentives they're really harnessing.
Well, that does bring us perfectly to the first giant red flag. You know, I told you when we were talking before that this, I had seen this company a few years ago, and the first red flag that jumps out is, hey, this company is based on we bring brokers in, and then we give them a piece if they bring other brokers into that commission. And then if those second brokers bring a third broker in, the first broker gets a piece of the third broker's commissions and all this sort of stuff. And you know, when you hear that, the first thing that jumps out in your mind is multi-level marketing scheme. Some people might say pyramid scheme. You know, it brings to me visions of Ackman versus Herbalife, which, by the way, Herbalife ended up winning that battle pretty dramatically. But, you know, there have been plenty of multi-level marketing schemes that have blown up on the stock market. They report huge growth. Eventually, it caps out. They're kind of just shuffling paper back and forth, and the whole thing explodes. So the first red flag we have to address is, why is EXPI different than a, you know, it can be a multi-level marketing scheme. That's fine. But why is it different than kind of a pyramid scheme, or what's actually happening here that's generating value instead of just everyone recruiting agents in and trying to get a piece of that?
So if you think, a lot of people think of like a pyramid scheme, you're like, okay, well, with EXP, to become an EXP member, you have to pay a fee. Okay. So that's okay. That's the one part of MLM generally is you have to pay a fee to get within the walled garden. And that generally could be you know, like a product or like a business plan or whatever. So if you look at like the FTC, they'd said like a pyramid scheme would, you know, compel an individual to who wishes to join to make a payment. So EXP does. But my kind of first rebuttal for that would be, well, if that by itself would also mean that Costco would be a, you know, ML, you know, pyramid scheme, because for you to be a member of Costco and to utilize their prices, you have to pay a membership fee of $60 or $120 as an executive member. So that
I love that comparison in your write-up. I just want to ask, what is EXP's membership fee up front, their monthly fee? And do, I don't think franchise brokers like Keller Williams or anything have anything, but do they have anything similar?
So to answer your first question, so the startup fee, I think $149 to start up with EXP. And then from there, there's an $85 a month fee. They call it like a technology fee.
Yep.
Is that what that allows the individual to have access to would be the Virbella platform. It would be KV Core, which is a CRM, quite expensive. I think the payment for an individual to get that would be $300 to $500 a month. So KV Core CRM, so a CRM would be a piece of software that allows somebody to connect and keep up to date with a growing list of clientele and potential prospects. Mm-hmm. And then there's other things, you know, like automated call, text, email. There's website development. There's, you know, having the educational content being 24/7 available through the cloud. So that $85 a month, you know, funds that to a very, you know, minimal amount and allows the scale of all of these agents to, you know, pay for tons of value for a very, very, very minimal cost. And then with the others, I don't know the exact specifics with the Keller Williams and if there's like an upfront fee, but they're a franchise type model with the revenue share kind of component, but not as well nice as an EXP because they do it based on net profit of the franchise location, which there's lots of smoke and mirrors that could be involved in that. You know, think of like a movie film accounting. You know, you can do lots of things to make it seem like you're not making money, but you technically are. And that can kind of screw over agents. Whereas in EXP, it's you're getting just a, you know, a percent based on your agents under your downline's revenue. And yep. So that means it's very clear and simple, which I think is a huge component of getting a right-sized, well-developed incentive model. So that kind of gives you an idea of that. But going back Go ahead.
I was just going to hammer home. I think one of the key differentiators for EXPI, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, you know, a lot of the multi-level marketing scheme, you've got tons of agents who only exist in there to bring people in. And a lot of the money is just, a lot of the money is people buying the product for themselves, or like that's a lot where a lot of the commission. And with ESPI, you actually have to have, like, nobody's going with Herbalife. There was the argument, oh, you know, people only buy the shakes for themselves. With ESPI, you don't have arguments, oh, people only buy the homes for themselves or right, something, right? Like, you actually have to have external homes sold, which are huge ticket items, in order for this model to work. So just to kind of add on to that.
Yep, yep. So that's getting down to the other parts of the pyramid scheme, kind of debunking that is with, to expand on your point, Andrew, is with the normal pyramid scheme or an MLM, you're selling a product to usually somebody within, you're trying to keep them within your kind of walled garden and hope that they sell it out to the public. But it usually doesn't work out that way because you recruit in somebody into your system, paying that whatever startup fee, mm-hmm. and then you try to incentivize them to buy as much product from you as possible, so whereby you can get, you know, a big split of that person's money, and that all that inventory usually sits in somebody's garage and is, you know, there's little value that's being created, whereby with an EXP, like you say, it's all the transactions are already happening, right? With the real estate agent, you know, they're already doing business with people, you know, externally, publicly. And if you're bringing somebody to EXP, those people are still doing their transactions and you're getting now a little cut of that. And so it's, as long as it's a pyramid scheme, doesn't work, or it does not provide value to the, you know, external public, whereby with EXP, it's like, you have to have transactions to happen to make anything go within this business and to make your money as, you know, somebody in an upline. Perfect. So that's I think it really is a huge part. You immediately see EXP, you hear a revenue share, immediately red flag comes up, because we're so used to hearing the Herbalifes, the other companies that, you know, try to create a product. They have no really good value. So what they try to do is try to lure people in with a bait and kind of switch model. Whereas this is, we're giving you more. We're giving you way more than we're giving everybody else. Just come in with it within our model. And, you know, we'll try to treat you as best as possible, because this is really a agent focused business. That's, you know, and that's the whole reason why they're, you know, drawing in so many different agents and top producing ones, because they just see the value is so much better within this model. And the model allows this to happen. It's just because the costs are so much lower than a brick and mortar model.
There's a lot of other things I want to talk about, but let me turn to the thing that kind of jumped out to me the most as maybe not a red flag, but a caution point, right? And that's, you just said, I'm going to use this as the transition. You just said, EXP says to the agents, we're giving you more, right? Better commission splits. We're giving you stock, all the sort of stuff. And that's awesome. But one of the things I'm surprised by is, you know, I'm just looking at their Q2 revenue, which they just reported again, the stock was up like 40% on the report. The growth was unbelievable, right? From about $350 million in revenue, I think, to $1 billion in revenue in a quarter, right? 300% revenue growth. But on 300% revenue growth, you saw adjusted EBITDA go from $13.5 million in Q2 2020 to $27 million in Q2 2021. So revenue grew 300%, EBITDA barely doubled. And by the way, about, you know, 40% of adjusted EBITDA is stock compensation, because they're giving out, as you said, to agents. They get them equity incentivized. So my question there is, are they giving too much to agents where, yeah, the business, you know, it's not losing money. It's adjusted EBITDA positive, but it's very low margins. And are they giving so much weight to the agents that, yes, they can grow huge amounts of revenue, but this is never going to be an actual profitable business because they just have to give everything away to the agents?
Very good question. And another thing that a lot of people, they see and they're like, yuck, turns people off pretty quickly. So first thing, I think the business is a little optically weird. And it looks like it's a hugely capital intensive business, and it's really not. The reason is the revenue that is booked is the total commission, right? And then they give out a lot. And so one way to look at the business that might be a little bit, it shows a bit more, would be to look at gross profit as their actual revenue that they're bringing in. And then you start seeing margins a little bit differently. So it goes from being a 2% margin business to a much better. And you start seeing other operational leverage if you're basing the EBITDA based off of gross profits instead of the whole entire, gargantuan revenue that they kind of book, but they're giving a ton. Another thing to consider is as they're attracting more top agents, the ones that are going to be capping out, the 16K is, their cap, and they're getting pretty much just a low transaction fee over that. That's where you start seeing, okay, their margins are going to be a little compressed. So there's a few things to also think about in terms of the business and where it could be going. So we're looking, rear view mirror right now. They've been able to grow. They've been able to attract good agents. But what now happens as they take into ancillary services like mortgage lending? You look at some of the title, other stuff like that. Then you start seeing that a lot of, the agent commission being, a pretty high cost and low margin. But if EXP agents are able to have a higher than average industry target and percentage of the ancillary services that they're able to transact with each one of these, their transactions, a lot of that money is going to be going straight to the bottom line. So there could be huge operational leverage once we're starting to get into some of the potential future avenues of money. So there's that. So it's optically looks weird, looks capital intensive, but it's really not. And the potential levers that they can start pulling as they start expanding out their offering of services for each one of their agents to offer could, be a huge
boon. Just to add on your point, it's something, as I was reading your write-up, I think you hit on it some, but if you've got a business that incentivizes the best real estate agents in the country to come on and do all their transactions through them, it does make sense, right? The agents are locked on, they're getting way better deals. And then you can start pushing them to, you mentioned they launched their mortgage thing. There's so much involved with real estate that there's so many opportunities once they've got all the transactions and transaction data flowing through that, they can start doing mortgages. They could start doing title insurance, and they don't have to do it themselves necessarily, right? They could do it to a third party and get a cut for making the connection, right? So this is why people love subscription businesses. Once you've got someone locked in and there's lots and lots of money rolling around the space, once you get someone locked in, you can just keep expanding and expanding and expanding.
And so one more thing to your point, a lot of investors love seeing companies that cater pretty primarily to investors, first and foremost. They hate seeing companies that focus on, say, like the employee first. And I think the companies that cater first to the employee are some of the greatest companies, that being Costco, that being Southwest Airlines, that being Nucor Steel. Their whole motto is, let me take care of the employee as best as I can. And not only will they in turn provide that to the customer will continue to come back and provide that to the shareholder. And so I think, again, it's kind of an optics thing from the outside being an investor looking in. We want somebody who's touting like the outsiders, book, talking like Warren Buffett or talking like, somebody who's, just focused on, investors, whereby the really good companies tend to focus on, providing as much as they can to the agent. And in this case, EXP with the agent. And then being able to attract more agents. And then once you hit that scale, and I think this is a huge thing. A lot of people will see EXP and, oh, well, I could just start up a company, a cloud brokerage company, and there's like three copycats now. And I can do the same thing. I can have the same commission split. I can come up with some crappy looking graphics online campus. I can do give more equity awards than EXP does. I can do this, that, and another. But I think if we think of it like a YouTuber, so, you know, it's literally zero barriers to entry to be a YouTuber, right? But for you to be massively successful, you need to have scale. And I think that's where EXP is showing that they're, you know, heads and shoulders above the competition, and they have that first mover advantage, is that because they have a fortress-like balance sheet, and because they have, they've, you know, first mover in this space, and they have been providing the value that they say they give to agents, that they're attracting the best, and they're, you know, just miles apart of the copycats. And the copycats, you know, are debt ridden. They don't really probably follow through with all of their agent centric philosophy as well as an EXP would. And, you know, they, you know, they're not in the position, profitability to, you know, give a dividend now as another income stream to agents. So it's just like EXP continually just, you know, is step ahead and has that scale where it's going to be really hard for somebody to compete against.
And the copycats are going to run into two issues, right? The first is, if you, Sean, are a great agent and you recruited me and you're also making a piece of my downstream, and now the copycats come to poach you, you're going to have to give up, you know, you're going to have the headache of leaving XPI's platform and everything. And those headaches are real for a business where the guys, you know, they're trying to go out and sell real estate. But you're also going to have the headache of, hey, I just lost all of that downstream commission I was getting from Andrew, which, you know, hopefully I'm a good real estate agent and that's meaningful. And then I think the second issue they're going to run into is EXPI is only taking 20% of the commissions up to 16K, and then basically the other people take everything. And our last discussion before this bear point was, hey, why aren't they seeing operating leverage? Why aren't profits going higher? It's not like they're operating on flat markets. So if somebody's going to try and, if a startup's going to try and undercut them on commission, there's not a lot of profit to go around, and they're not coming in with the same scale and the same kind of subscription fees that EXPI has. So, you know, this is one of the reasons Amazon, you say your margin is my opportunity, right? Like if you keep your margins really low and you keep, I think the agents are more the customers than the employees, but if you keep your customers really happy, you keep your margins really low, it's going to be really hard for a startup to come in and kind of undercut you. Do you want to add anything there?
No, I think you said that well. It's the margins are low. I think they've been working on their model. It wasn't perfect. It still isn't perfect, but they've been trying to iterate on it to make it to the point where it can be profitable. It won't be hugely profitable, but it profitable enough to make a sustainable business and to achieve what they want to achieve, which is to, you know, be the biggest real estate brokerage in the world. But as you pointed out, the other companies, like I said, they're weaker in terms of balance sheet. Not only that, they have to be able to compete with these guys who are way bigger, lower margins, and you just have to give away. So they're not going to last long. And especially if there's a downturn, you know, what can they do? If they run out of, you know, the cash flow coming in, they can't pay off their debtors, they're screwed. And so if you're thinking now as a real estate agent, okay, who do I want to hang my shingle up on? Well, I can go to this new one who's giving pretty much everything away, but are they going to be here in, you know, a couple of years? Probably not. But EXP, okay, they've shown that they're a winner. They're attracting the winners. They have, you know, fortress-like balance sheet. Now we're getting dividends. There's so many good qualities. This looks like a company that can last. So you're going to go there.
Let me ask. So you mentioned the dividend a couple of times, and I put some questions and thoughts I had coming into this. I'll put them in a link to them in the show notes. I put them on Twitter. And one of the things that jumped out to me was there was a quote from, I believe, the CEO who said, hey, we've got agents coming on who go on and they celebrate every time the stock price goes up, you know, and they use it to go to other agents and say, this, we get stock compensation. The stock keeps going up. Think how rich you'll be if you come over here and you get some of the stock and everything. And you've mentioned, hey, now the agents, they get stock and the stock has a dividend. So they get a dividend stream part of this. And that's all great. It raises two concerns, right? You always worry when everybody is kind of cheering the stock on. I remember it, not that this is Enron, but Enron had the stock price when you entered the lobby and people would cheer. And I know people at Lehman Brothers who would say, hey, we'd get in and the first day, a senior partner would come, be like, I'm going to tell you one important thing. Never sell the stock. This is what you're going to retire on. And obviously, Lehman. But you know, I do worry when you've got a company that is so focused on the stock and the stock price that does create, Enron and Lehman aside, it creates issues. And you know, if the market tanked and EXPI stock went from 45 to 20 tomorrow, would that create huge issues with recruiting new agents? Would that create huge issues with agents who came over who got stock and their stock's cut in half and they go to EXPI and they say, hey, I thought you were supposed to pay us better. And the stock you have, it's worthless. What's going on here? So I just want to talk about the stock for a second.
That's very, very good points. And you know, if there is a downturn and the stock cuts in half, that could be, you know, something that could be a little of a hang up for recruiting as many people as they've been able to recruit. But then again, if you think from Q4 last year, it was way higher than the stock was, and over the last couple of quarters, the stock has tanked, right? And a lot more than 20%, 40%, 50%. I think it's gone down like, I don't know, 50, something like that. So a lot. But they've still been able to acquire people. And I think you might have heard some people who tout the stock. And, you know, not all of the recruiters within the EXP model are going to be, you know, the best, or they're trying to be, you know, they might be a little seedy. They might be trying to just work up based on recruiting other people instead of doing sales and recruiting people. Or, you know, so it's the individual agent, you know, can choose to do whatever they want to do. But I think from what I've seen, what I've heard from a lot of the bigger people who are trying to recruit large teams within the EXP model, they're not saying, okay, our stock's going to go up forever, or that's really the selling point. What the stock really is just a way for everybody to think as a team. Okay. And that's one of the, you know, points that I talked about in creating a good super incentive. Okay. Is there's six. So it's something that's simple, something that's really significant, and it's timely. It's certain, where the payer can't game it. The payee can't game it. And then the share the wealth. And I think that's the huge component of the equity and the whole reason why EXP did a reverse merger years ago to be a publicly traded company, is because the stock component is a huge part of sharing the wealth and how getting everybody to think as an owner, but not only an owner, but an owner of EXPI to work together. Okay. I think that's the huge thing. And as long as we get everybody to think together, then we start seeing some really interesting things happening. And so if you think a traditional brokerage, none of the agents own any of the brokerage company, but the brokerage is, you know, a partner. So it's a very, if you see any, so my business is working with real estate agents. You know, those are my, you know, big customer base for me. It's kind of a dog eat dog world. Okay. Even with this in the same brokerage company, each one of these agents is kind of fighting against each other for deals. Okay, that's not really the best situation, because you have a limited number of supply of deals happening in a certain area. And if everybody's fighting for it, that kind of sucks. But if you have an EXP model where if you're within the same brokerage company, you're a partner. You're an actual partner with the person you're working next to. And so now we have an opportunity where, even though I might not be getting that deal, if they're part of my downstream, I'm getting part of the revenue share. Or if they're not part of my downstream, I'm still getting, you know, that deal is still an, you know, positive for EXP.
I do hear you. I am a little skeptical. Like, if they're part of your downstream, I'm sure you're fine with it. But I am a little skeptical of, hey, I lost this $2 million house where I make what, a $10,000 commission, or I don't know how much. It would be more than that, right? It's about 5% is the commission. So you'd probably make about $100,000 of commission if you sold a $2 million house.
Well, it's a 2.5. Well, it's usually 2.5%.
Oh, because they split it. Yeah. So let's just call it 50,000. I am a little skeptical that, you know, you're not part of my downstream. You and I work for EXPI. You win the deal and you get that 50,000 commission. Yeah, I say, oh, that's okay. I own 5 shares of EXPI stock or something. But I do hear you, especially with downstream, it does help align.
Right. But it's, to your point, it wouldn't be, you know, if somebody is EXP, they're not part of my downstream and they win a $2 million listing and I don't, and we're competing against it. Yeah, it's going to suck, but it's going to not suck as much as if it was somebody, the same brokerage, traditional brokerage company. You don't own any shares of that company, so it doesn't really, so it's a little less of a problem. But it still would hurt, right?
Yeah, I will just say I'm skeptical. You know, the share ownership, it so pales in comparison to that direct hit, but that's fine. One thing that struck me, you mentioned they came public through a reverse merger, and I told you before this, I looked years ago, and the reverse merger, for people who are a little less experienced, whenever you see a company come from public through reverse merger, it's generally a pretty big red flag, right? Because a lot of times, especially if you're doing a reverse merger into kind of a cash shell, use that just to get a public listing, you're going to go pump the stock. At this point, I think that's behind us. This is a real company. We can put that behind us. But the second red flag is, I mentioned earlier, Virbela, the first time I looked at them, I looked and I said, oh, this is 1990s style graphics. Like, it seems a little strange that a company is coming out here and pumping Virbela as, hey, this is unique to us. The CEO at a conference recently said, one day we might spin Virbela, but it's really important for us that we have the exclusive license as a real estate agency to have Virbela. And then they went and bought, it was Success Magazine recently. And they said, hey, we're mailing this to all of our employees. This is a critical piece of our culture. That, you know, it was almost the second thing they led a conference with. And I look at Success Magazine, this 90s style graphics for Virbela, it just all seems a little cheesy to me, I guess. You know, it seems strange for a company this big to be saying these are critical pieces of us. So I just wanted to talk about that for a second. I don't know where I'm quite going with their point, but there's something a little strange with it that I can't quite put my finger on.
Well, think of it like this, Andrew. Virbela was a huge component of their business, and EXP was by far the largest client of Virbela. And the reason why they took it over was the whole fact of, okay, well, what happens if Virbela isn't able to sustain themselves? And then, you know, the company would be screwed because now their cloud place of meeting other individuals within EXPI would be gone. And think of it also as, so it was a big...
Isn't that weird though? Like, it's so critical to EXPI, but EXPI is their biggest customer to the point where they're worried that Virbela is going to go under if they don't take them over. But the thing is so critical that this hyper growth platform is growing on it, but they're kind of the only customer. Do you see why I'm seeing that's a little strange?
Yeah. So it's for them, it's just trying to bring it within their umbrella, not only to, you know, just have a little bit more control over and the sustainability of the company, but to also keep it within their umbrella. But I see it as more of Glenn as an operator that sees something that, you know, huge cost that they have. Okay, that's one of the big costs within EXP was, you know, paying for this software. Okay, now they're bringing it in within their umbrella, and so now their cost is now, you know, just a part of the investment within the business. Success was another big cost of EXP, you know, having the Success Magazine going to real estate agents. So that cost is now, boom, within the company. So one less thing to have to pay out, you know, each quarter, each month or whatever. So, and also additionally, so if you think of it like, Amazon and Jeff Bezos, he has been able to create, you know, the business of where it's at today because, you know, like AWS, they had a problem. They had something that they needed within their business, and they're able to build it to a certain point and have it become a huge, you know, component of the business. And I think Glenn is doing something kind of similar, taking these, you know, costs, bringing it within the company, cutting those costs down, but also having a little bit more trajectory in creating brands or creating technology funnels that can help create sustainable, better relationships with agents. So to kind of go back to your point that Virbela looks like it's from 1990s or, you know, whatever. It looks a little cheesy. And one thing to point out is the reason why the graphical component is the way it's at is just the component of, you know, where technology is at and what the internet and the web can sustain bandwidth wise to make it, you know, smooth, you know, workable, and not something that's not useful. So something that's less latent and useful for the individual. So what kind of actual value does the campus, the online clouds place provide? So take, for instance, a traditional brick and mortar brokerage company. They will have online, or not online, but they'll have courses and educational content for their agents to, you know, provide to them, and so they can get better and better, and, you know, make more deals and become better agents. And, you know, the brokerage makes more money, yada yada yada. And if you're at a traditional brick and mortar place, everybody just has to get in their car at a specific time, drive there, and sit down. And, you know, if it's 2 hours, it, you know, technically comes out to, you know, more than that. You know, 3 hours wasted. So it's a huge kind of pain point for agents to have to go to that brick and mortar location to have the educational content. Now, if you're an agent and you can just plop on your computer any time of the day, 24/7, and access educational content, or, you know, just have a meeting that might have to be scheduled with your brokerage company, it's so much easier just to plop on. And we're doing Zoom right now and it's face to face, but in a situation where it's easier to be around more individuals and be more interactive in this 3D space, it doesn't really matter what the 3D graphics look like. It's what value is it providing, you know, a little less friction for the agents in terms of getting their educational content, meeting with other brokers, managers, or mentors to, you know, answer questions. And so that's where the value of the Virbela platform is for EXP and the agents.
So I don't quite buy that. I would just say, like, it boggles my mind to believe that Keller Williams or one of these other big brokerages doesn't have like an online learning course where you could just kind of go and online learn versus in person. But what I do buy is that EXPI is focused 100% on digital, and I bet you their digital experiences are better. And as you said, I bet you Keller Williams, when you go, you just go and log onto an online portal and kind of watch a video that's just directed at you. Whereas I do believe what you're saying with EXPI, where their whole thing is we've been online for the whole thing. They have better ways of, hey, you can go watch an online video, but we've got a better system for you can communicate to other agents in your thing and say, hey, I really found this thing interesting, or kind of share the learnings or something. Does that make sense?
So first point is Keller Williams and pretty much all of the competition, there's a brick and mortar component.
That's exactly what I meant, because they were brick and mortar focused. I bet their online learning experience, it's there, but it's significantly worse.
It's significant. And the whole reason, if they take out that brick and mortar component, what's really the value? Okay. So, and even here, like anywhere that I've kind of operated in, like a Keller Williams, they're going to have a brick and mortar location. And those managers, whatever franchise owners of those places, they want the people to come in because there's really no other value to that brokerage.
Yep.
And like you say, I think Keller Williams, they've poo-pooed like the Virbela world with EXPI.
I saw a quote where they said exactly my criticism of it. Yeah. Right.
But now what are they doing? They're trying to catch up, but they're so far behind, like you say. And they still have that brokerage component, that brick and mortar component, where it's just not going to work. And because the people who are already within that system, they're incentivized to keep that brick and mortar there, which the cost is going to be so much higher. It just doesn't work out. So if you think of like any other company that has gone through a technological change, so like a Polaroid, and you know, they can, you know, they were investing in digital cameras before anybody else, but because their previous business was so based on the chemical, whatever the chemical component of the photography, they didn't go full on with the digital, and then they become extinct. And I think that's going to be the same thing with traditional brokers or the Keller Williams out there. Yep, they just, they're so indebted to their previous model, they can't keep up. And they already, and those agents within their model, that's eXp's opportunity. Okay. And that the gross profits of Realogy, Keller Williams, you know, it's like a $5-6 billion opportunity. Those are all eXp's, you know, opportunity right there.
Well, Sean, I think we've covered a lot. I mean, we hit there. As I said at the beginning, this is a little bit of a battleground stock. There are red flags. And I think we did a great job addressing all of them. You have a hard stop in about 3 or 4 minutes. So I just want to flip it over to you. Is there anything on EXPI, you know, any lingering bear cases we didn't address? Any, I don't even think we talked about, we did talk a little bit about some of the huge kind of expansion opportunities that they get maybe into mortgages and all this sort of stuff. But is there anything on EXPI you really wish that we had hit that we didn't talk about so far?
Well, it's, I think another thing that people would come up with is that EXPI might not have like the full on, like the CFO. He might not be like the perfect. There might be some like discrepancies in like the ownership filings. You mentioned in one of your posts, you found like a little error with like one of the gifts. And
I encourage people to look at it. It was the value of their holiday Christmas presents in the filings. And it was very interesting.
So it's, there's hair there. Okay. And hair meaning that there might be mistakes, and a company that's growing as fast as this company is growing, there's going to be mistakes. And I think you just got to be comfortable with that, because it's either them making mistakes on purpose or them making mistakes just because they're growing so freaking quick, they can't really keep up with themselves. And I think it's this bucket rather than this bucket, because just the way that they're going towards, you know, their value proposition being for agents, and what the value they're actually creating isn't really taking away from anybody. It's just adding more to the pot for everybody within the ecosystem. So I think that this is a company that's got a lot of hair on it. Okay. It's not perfect, and by really any means, but I think if you're looking back from a, you know, top down, more structural lens, and seeing what this company is and what it potentially could be and what opportunity that they have in front of it is quite interesting. They're at what, 3-4% of the real estate agents within the US. So, you know, huge runway. And they've shown that they've been able to, you know, execute. You know, they're acquiring more agents. They're treating them all well. And just the way they're acquiring partnerships with Glenn Stearns, you know, one of the top mortgage industry leaders, you know, since the 80s, and, you know, going into that side of the market. I just think that even I stated in the write-up, it's just a superlative company where it just seems to get better and better over time. You know, they had, you know, issues like in their reporting, like many years ago, they've been able to get through that. So like I said, it's, even though it's hairy, they're iterating, and it seems like they just keep, you know, increasing the value proposition for agents, which again, like I said, keeps those agents coming back, doing more business, which in turn will, you know, help the shareholders in the long term.
Sean, I have two quick questions, then I'm going to let you go. The first is, you know, Expo, we haven't even talked valuation yet because this is a hyper growth company. Obviously, they haven't fully inflected yet, but right now I think the market cap's about $7 billion. You know, I know you invest for multi-baggers with a long-term view. I think you said in the start of your Expel write-up, companies that can change the world and change your financial fortune. So it's a $7 billion company right now. I mean, are you thinking 5-7 years from now, this could be a $50 billion company, a $100 billion company? Like how big are you kind of playing for here?
I like your Freudian slip. You keep saying Expel.
No, it's because the start of your EXPI write-up referenced your Expel write-up, and you had a quote from the Expel write-up. So it is not a Freudian slip. I know exactly what I am quoting.
So what could the company be in, 5-10 years? I think it's going to be a lot. I think it's going to be, significant. I think a lot of people look at the company now and, just see the hair and are turned off. They see the margins and they're turned off. They see something. They see the revenue share, they're turned off. But I think this company has shown it's been able to acquire quality talent and motivate them. And I think they'll continue to do that. And, how big can the company be? It could be a lot bigger. Or I think it's going to be, it could be 50, it could be 100, who knows? I just know it's going to be more than here.
Perfect. And then the last question, I think you found Expel in 2014 and the start of your XPI write-up said, hey, it's been a while, but I found another high conviction one. So, in 5 or 6 years, when you find the next high conviction one, my next question is, A, will you first let me know when you found it? And B, will you come on the podcast and talk about it?
Well, I wrote about, I think, EXPI like in the 9th of July. So you could have found it. You just, but yeah, no, it's, I'll definitely let everybody know, but I'm slow. I'm really slow. And I'm an operator, so I don't spend really too much time investing. I'm more curious on how, creating a great business, which, does also help finding great businesses too.
And look, it only takes one, right? If you're running concentrated, it only takes one. So anyway, really appreciate you coming on. Great work. This was a really fun conversation. I'm surprised how many red flags and everything we got through, because I think you did a great job explaining them all. But I'm going to include the link to his write-up in the show notes. I'm going to include his Twitter account if you guys want to go and message him and ask him all the questions that we didn't quite get to. But Sean, thank you so much for coming on, and looking forward to chatting soon.
Thank you, Andrew.